Hello and welcome to the Rembrandt Parables. I'm Tim Cooper. Today I have a question. If you were given the choice, which would you rather have? The chance at winning $1 million or the certainty of owning a penny? As the staff at the Morton's Coffee Pub discovers, it's a question with a much deeper meaning. Find out what it is today on the Rembrandt Parables and 83 Uses for a Penny. The moral of today's story is found in 1 Peter 6:6. But godliness with contentment is great gain. Oscar and Herbie slowly navigated their way through Iverwind Stadium after the annual Labor Day Classic football game. The afternoon had been perfect. It was sunny and warm, the ideal conditions to watch football. Add to that a decisive Ticat victory over the Argos, and the two were treated to the penultimate end to the summer. The two sun-baked spectators dodged around jubilant fans in a pell-mell of activity. The shadow area near the stands was alive with the pungent aromas of body odor and spilt beer. A few Argo fans were moving to the exits as quickly as possible to avoid the jeers of euphoric Ticat supporters. Herbie did his best to clear a path for Oscar, but progress was slow. After what seemed like an eternity spent in a sweaty sauna, a clearing opened up in the crowd. Herbie lunged forward, expecting Oscar to follow. He looked back to discover that Oscar was lagging behind and leaning over the side of his wheelchair. Oscar halted the flow of the crowd, causing a bottleneck near the north side concession stands. Fearing the worst, Herbie fought his way back through the crowd toward his friend. That was typical of Herbie. No silver lining could be bright enough that he couldn't notice the dark cloud. Every situation, no matter how positive, was always one step from disaster. Oscar often said that Herbie could be given a tour of heaven with its streets of gold and unrivaled beauty, and say, eh. Oscar was the opposite of Herb. There is no situation so grim that he can't uncover goodness. Once, on a bitter night in October, his electric wheelchair broke down 3 blocks from his home. Soaked to the skin and shivering with cold, he sat on the sidewalk, unable to move. After waiting nearly half an hour, 3 young men came down the street. With rain pouring into his eyes and snot dripping off his nose, Oscar asked for help. The 3 guys obliged and pushed him home. Oscar spent the next week sick in bed, but before the 3 left, Oscar promised to buy them all coffees for their trouble. He still meets with them regularly at the Morton's Coffee Pub, each taking turns to buy coffee. Oscar retells the story like it was a great day. Herbie thinks he's lucky they didn't rob him and leave him to die of pneumonia. When Herbie lost Oscar in the crowd after the football game, his mind raced back to that fateful night on Birch Street. He started frantically jumping up and down, calling for Oscar. Suddenly, as if the Red Sea were parting, the crowd opened up to reveal Oscar, leaning over the side of his wheelchair, struggling to reach a penny he found on the ground. Several people narrowly missed stepping on his outstretched fingers. One lady hit him in the head with her purse, knocking his glasses onto his lap. "A penny," Oscar said proudly as he held it up to Herbie. "A penny? You risked your life for a penny?" said Herb. "What do you mean, risked? It's not like I fought off a pack of ravenous wolves to get it," said Oscar. Sliding his glasses back onto his face, Oscar was now able to examine his discovery. "Ooh, look, it's a centennial penny. See, it has a bird on it. A sparrow, I think." Herbie stared blankly at Oscar in disbelief. "Come on, let's go," he said. Slowly, they navigated their way through the crowd and headed for home. The next morning, Herbie was back at work facing the morning rush. The weather turned cold overnight, reminding everyone that summer was officially over. A sullen mood seemed to settle over the city. Things were quiet among the staff at the Morton's as well. After the morning rush, the crew began cleaning up for lunch. The cold kept the pedestrian crowd to a minimum. The drive-through, on the other hand, was a constant flow of activity. Oscar made his way to the restaurant around mid-morning. He bought a large double-double and settled at a table. He pulled out his centennial penny and started sliding it back and forth across the table. Before long, Oscar was the only customer in the restaurant. "Did you know the lottery is at 54 million?" said Myrtle, breaking a prolonged silence.
"Dollars?" said Herbie.
"No, pesos," said Doreen.
"What's that in Canadian?" said Herbie.
Rembrandt let out a whistle. "That's a lot of coffee."
"I know," said Myrtle.
"What do you say we go in for a ticket?"
"I'm in," said Butch.
"Me too," said Doreen.
"Sure," said Herbie. "How about you, Rem?"
"Nah, I don't think so," said Rembrandt.
"What? Why not?" said Butch.
"It's a waste of money," replied Rembrandt.
"A scam by the government to make more money. I give them enough already."
"Aren't you cynical?" said Myrtle.
"It's just a bit of fun, chasing a dream and all. You put a little down and who knows? Someone's got to win, may as well be us."
"Don't talk to him about it," said Doreen.
"Without him, there's more for us."
"Just think, Rembrandt," continued Myrtle. "What would you do with $10 million?
"Why just 10? I thought the jackpot was 54 million, said Herbie.
50 divided 5 ways, said Myrtle patiently.
"Oh, you know what I'd do? I'd buy a yacht, a big one, the biggest one in the marina," said Herbie.
"That sounds nice," said Myrtle.
"Nice? What good's a yacht in Hamilton Harbor? It's a waste," said Doreen. "No, I'd sail it to Newfoundland in the summer and Florida in the wintertime. I'd never have to see winter again. What'd you do with your 10 mil, Dor?"
Doreen thought for a moment. A smile slowly spread across her face. "First, I'd create the world's largest zoo. I'd put a wall around Newfoundland." Myrtle frowned. Herbie laughed. Butch and Rembrandt rolled their eyes. Oscar groaned.
"Seriously? I'd take a trip to the remotest part of the earth. Somewhere in Africa. Maybe South America. I could fund my own archaeological digs," Doreen said, as her face brightened. "That would be phenomenal."
"You don't need to spend lots of money to dig in the sand. You could go to the playground and do it for free," said Herbie. He ducked for cover as a dish towel whooshed past his head. While everyone else was daydreaming, Oscar was writing on his table. In pencil, he drew 2 sets of concentric circles, with a line running from one to the other. When he was finished, he turned to Rembrandt and said, "You want to play?"
"Play what?" asked Rembrandt.
"Coin curling," said Oscar.
"So you're the one who keeps drawing on the tables.
How does it work?"
"It's just like regular curling, except with pennies.
See my new one? I found it after the game yesterday. It's old. See the bird? I think it's a sparrow."
Rembrandt examined the coin as he sat across from Oscar. Behind him, the others were still daydreaming.
"The first thing I do," said Butch, "is finish my tattoo bodysuit. My back would be a phoenix rising from the flames. My chest would be Icarus with his wings melting from the sun. Then I'd buy a Porsche. What about you, Myrtle?"
"Nothing extravagant. I'd pay my bills, then pay for my kids' university."
She nodded her head and smiled.
"Yep. Then I'd take a trip to the Mediterranean. Maybe even take my husband."
Back at the game, Rembrandt slid his penny across the table.
"Ha! Beat that," he said.
Oscar smiled wisely. He placed his penny at the far edge of the table and gave it a shove. It curled past a guard and knocked Rembrandt's penny out of the rings.
"How'd you do that?" said Rembrandt.
Oscar just smiled.
"Hey, Rembrandt," said Herbie. "What would you do with $10 million?
Rembrandt shook himself from the game.
"What?
Oh, nothing."
"Nothing?" said Butch.
"Nothing. I don't have that much money, so I don't even want to pretend," said Rembrandt. He paused for a second.
"And if I did, I wouldn't be selfish with it." The others scowled.
"No, wait, hear me out. Doreen, you'd have all that money and not help your neighbors, the Lianchenkos? And Herbie, what about your family back home? Wouldn't you do something for them?"
The restaurant erupted with yelling and finger-pointing.
Rembrandt," said Oscar. The shouts of the others left him unheard.
"Rembrandt, it's your turn."
Rembrandt looked back at Oscar. "It's not really a good time," he said.
"Why not? You guys aren't doing anything important," said Oscar.
"Not doing anything important? How can you say that?" shouted Herbie.
Well, said Oscar, you're fighting over money you don't even have. How important could that be? Everyone else looks stunned.
That's right, said Rembrandt.
Oscar looked at Rembrandt calmly. You're no better. You don't know how you'd respond with that kind of wealth, so it's easy for you to act all high and mighty, said Oscar.
So if someone offered you $10 million, you wouldn't take it, Butch asked.
Oscar straightened up in his chair, cocked his head to one side, and thought a moment.
I don't know. No one's ever offered it to me. But until someone does, I'll just enjoy what I already have.
Oscar placed his centennial penny on the edge of the table and pushed it toward the rings. It slid just to the left of the center line. At the last second, it curled to the right, stopping at the center button. Oscar pumped his fist and looked up at the others with a smile.
I hope you enjoyed 83 Uses for a Penny. Please join me again soon for another Rembrandt parable. Thank you, good day, and God bless.